This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Today, Mark, really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Pat, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Mark, why don't we start off? You tell us a bit about yourself and about your company, please.
Okay. Mark Gasparato. I live here in Ottawa. Really, I was posted here when I was in the Army in 2009. And although I moved around a lot, my family stayed here. And so they certainly consider it to be home. I retired in 2017 after 2 decades in the combat engineers. And I started a leadership development firm called the Gasparato Group. And many of the people that work with me are former colleagues from my time in uniform. And so we obviously know each other quite well. We've gone through some very interesting times together. So there's very tight bonds of human connection, which makes for a great team. So we do leadership development primarily. And in terms of the niche things that we do, very hands-on outdoor experiential events, often in military-inspired classrooms. And so we partner with several other organizations that have the infrastructure, but also the vehicles. So there's a tank museum in Oshawa, and so we'll use tanks and armored vehicles as part of this classroom, or there's a training facility in Brockville that caters to more tactical things, and that's really not what we're into, but we can take corporate teams there into the field and really give them a novel and unique experience. So leadership development is what we do, both classroom, but also that hands-on. So we've got the full circle in terms of that adult learning.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service. Appreciate everything that you and your colleagues do and continue to do for our country. Mark, is this, who's your audience for this? Is it private sector, public sector? Is it both? Is it large businesses, small bit? Like, kind of walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, well, at first, you know, I would get that question, and it's whoever Mark knew was. you know, for most entrepreneurs, you start with the closest dollar, and that's your network. What I do is really applicable to everyone, because we believe to lead others effectively, it starts with leading yourself. So you can be an individual contributor and not necessarily have a leadership position and still benefit from the work that we do. And we also work with teams. Most of my work comes from the private sector. Government procurement is messy, inefficient. I mean, you can put any number of labels to it, but I find it's a lot easier just to work with the private sector. Big companies don't come to me for the core leadership development that they do, because normally they've got that in-house, or they'll partner with a business school, but they'll come to me for that experiential, very hands-on event, especially if they're in the defense industry, because a military-inspired classroom has the additional benefit of allowing them to build empathy for the end user of their product, which really no other leadership development program allows them to do. So we've had small digital marketing firms come through, and we've had, you know, very, very large Canadian defense industry companies come through. So it's not a tight answer, but, you know, that's historically over the last 5-6 years who have been my clientele.
So Mark, is each one of these, are they customized depending on the size of the business? Like obviously you have a framework, I would assume, of kind of the core, the go-to things you want to discuss with any leadership group, but then do you have a customizable template built around it as well to meet the needs of the people that you're dealing with?
Yes. So that's been the great challenge. How do you customize at scale?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yes, we've got some core programs, workshops. So, for example, I'm a Tech Canada speaker, and I get anywhere from 15 to 20 of those sessions a year. And so there's that workshop. And then I've got a series of workshops that goes deep on all of the pillars, and that can provide the core. And then there's these more hands-on experiential events that can pull in the theory that you would learn on these workshops in a classroom setting, and therefore you can experiment with it in this novel setting. So you had a short question, I have a long answer, and that tends to be my MO. But yes, there is a core curriculum, and then we will build a package based on the objectives and constraints that that a client has.
Okay. And how long have you been in business for?
2017 is when I retired.
Right. So did you start right away, Mark? Or did you?
I did in a different company that I was a silent partner in while I was still in uniform. And then, you know, for various reasons that didn't work out. So Gasparotto Group was incorporated and just so happened coincidentally on my birthday, July 17th, 2018.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I ask everyone on the show is, you know, is there one, two, maybe even three kind of core lessons you'd like to pass along to our listeners about starting a business and, you know, what to look out for?
I don't know how widely this applies to other entrepreneurs. Certainly in speaking with others in the community, there's commonality here, but, you know, I haven't done any research, so I can't say, you know, statistically, these are the top things. If you can get through the startup phase, it does get easier, but it never gets easy. And, you know, business development is always front and center. And I think, you know, from an Army veteran, you're not taught about that in uniform. And so that's been the greatest growth professionally for me, is on marketing and sales, without a doubt. I think you should get a lot of perspectives during that sense making part. So before you launch, what is it you're trying to do? What market are you trying to serve? And even, you know, for specific projects, but then you need to have the courage to converge on, you know, whatever that endeavor is, like whatever you're going to throw out there on the market. And so it's about a minimal viable product and trial and error, and the ultimate feedback comes from the market. And I think you need a vision, so you need a North Star, but you can't be so narrowly focused on it. You need to have slightly wider arcs than that. You don't want them at 180 degrees, because then, you know, like, you know, where are you going? But if I think of COVID, and because we were in experiential learning, you know, primarily that's what we were hoping to do. Well, that got shut down for at least 18 months. And so if you've got wide enough arcs that the market can pull you within them to where you're needed, that gives you a great amount of flexibility and therefore resilience. And so those are a couple of things. And then, you know, the next thing for me, my top key performance indicator is returning customers. Customers will say very nice things about you, you know, and I find as a veteran, you know, they don't want to say bad things about a veteran, especially when they've heard my story. But it's only validated when they come back. And it's a lot easier to farm than it is to hunt. And so if you have someone in your stable, you should be giving them the discount and not a new customer the discount, right? You should be taking care of those who are already in your network, because that's the closest dollar that you can go to. And I think my last, you know, great learning, and I knew this before going in, but it was really reinforced, is as the owner and founder, I need to focus revenue generation on my gifts, what I'm particularly good at, especially in the market, and when I've got the cash flow to delegate and outsource the rest, and that allows for that growth.
It's really good advice, Mark, when you mentioned the very first point you mentioned, you know, had to do with business development. And it's been my experience that a lot of entrepreneurs, they don't see that as being the most important thing. They think, if I've got a great product or great service, you know, I'm going to be found. And yes, you may eventually get to that point, but in that startup phase, that first, you know, well, first few years, quite frankly, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable if business development or sales is not your thing. And in fact, when I'm coaching, you know, entrepreneurs, and if they're not comfortable with sales, they say, either you have to get somebody to do this for you, or don't start your business yet until you get comfortable with it, because it's not good. You won't survive that first year. And a lot of them are taken aback by that. And I don't know why that is. It seems logical to me. Do you have any thoughts on that as to why you think people would push back on that? I'm sure that's been some of your experience as well when you're talking to others.
Sometimes I wonder if I'm any good at sales. And then sometimes I wonder, what has allowed me some success within my network. And a lot of it is you got to get past the first eight no's. I don't know where it was written. Most people need 8 or 9 touches before they say yes. So some of it's a numbers game. I would say I kind of go in cycles between effort on outbound sales and then executing on clients that have come to me via inbound, word of mouth and referral, and those sorts of channels. I am only slightly becoming mature in terms of my business development strategy, especially around outbound. I've taken a more passive approach with social media, so it was more brand awareness and content marketing. But for my keynote part of my business, because I've got some interesting stories from my time overseas and the leadership lessons and the team building lessons that go with them, I know that I will only get so far with inbound. And if I'm going to try to pivot my business to a greater amount of higher margin activities, and then I need to do the outbound. And I've given myself 6 months to sort of kick myself in the ass to get through it. But it really is about a habit. And the most successful people I've seen have turned it into a habit, and they grind through it. And that doesn't mean that when they're on a call with someone that they're not actively listening and trying to provide value and service, but they know that they've got to get in a certain number, and they do it. And I have yet to develop that level of discipline.
Yeah, it can be a challenge. I've been selling my whole career, quite frankly, even before starting my own business. So, initially it didn't really come natural to me. I had that stereotypical salesperson image in my head of the Herb Charlick with the white belt and, coming at you, and only people of a certain age would get that joke, but,
yourself.
Yeah, I just did. Well, you laugh, so there we're even. but one thing I learned early on is my first ever sales manager, he told me, listen, 5% of the market is ready to buy your product at any one time. You just have to go find that 5%. So pre-digital days, or pre-digital marketing days in particular, it was old-fashioned way of doing it. But those ratios really haven't changed. And you mentioned the 8 to 9 touch points, and you're very accurate with that. The number is now 12 to 13 or 14 or 15 because right. Everything is getting so big. It's getting so crowded, all of the space from right. A digital perspective. So anyway, my point to all this is anyone listening is Mark is 100% right. It is a numbers game. Despite all the new tools and technology that we have available to help us with those numbers games, but it's still, and there are people out there that want to buy your product. You just got to reach them. I'm a big fan of Dragon's Den and Shark Tank and shows like that. And Mark Cuban has a great line. He says, sales cures all, and I understand what he means by that. By having that top line revenue, then you can figure out the rest after that. But without it, you don't have anything. So, anyone listening that's thinking of starting a business, if you're not willing to put in the time to do some selling or hire someone to do it for you, then I would humbly suggest you reconsider that decision.
And I think if you're starting out, the founder is the salesperson. Trying to get someone who can sell you or your product is very difficult. I don't know that they're unicorns, but they are few and far between. And I have yet to be successful outsourcing sales to anyone other than me.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Mark. I mean, I've been in business for 10 years now, and I do have people that help set up appointments, but I'm the one going in and closing it, just because everything is so near and dear to me that I my understanding of it is just by its nature, owning a business, that you better understand your business better than anyone else. So yeah, I would agree with that. But I do know a lot of people that struggle with, you know, the even getting on the phone or even emailing somebody. So at least have somebody doing that legwork for you. And then you go in as the person that closes the business. And one thing else I want to touch on, you mentioned earlier on about, you know, it's easier to farm than it is to hunt. Is that the term you used?
Yes.
Do you mind expanding on that a little bit? Because I agree with that 100%, but for our listeners to really understand what that, you know, to keep your current clients happy should be your number one priority. Otherwise, you're going to be constantly losing and gaining, and you're just going to level off. Is that a fair comment?
It is. And so the third term, and I didn't come up with this, it was explained to me this way, but it really resonated with me. So there's fishing, whereby you cast the net and you just see what you pull in, right? So that's a more passive way, content marketing, or, you know, throwing stuff out on social media, or you know, other advertising. Hunting is where you specifically target someone because you think that they either meet the right demographic, or, you know, they have a need for what you have. And then farming is about, you know, watering the plant that's already there. So it's much easier to farm because you already have those clients within your garden, if you will. And, you know, all you're doing is you're adding the water, you're adding the fertilizer, you're continually adding value to the relationship. And they'll come to you, you know, they'll come back to you a lot easier because you're top of mind. So you don't have to go through all of the other exercises and channels, which could cost you money when you're doing that hunting. And also with hunting, you know, often you may think you know what you're looking for out in the market in terms of that ideal client, but it's going to take you those multiple touch points. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, 5%. So one out of 20 people are going to want to talk to you about it, right? So that takes time.
Yeah.
So I've done a mixture of all three, and I think you do need a blend. You know, what that exact ratio is, you know, for me, has changed over time. Because before I had a brand, I had to do all hunting, right? Before I had a brand or clients, it was all hunting. And then now I'm only doing that to augment or to reach certain growth goals based on, you know, a pretty good ability to farm. And, you know, now that I've got a brand that's, you know, recognizable, certainly in Canada, and certainly within the experiential learning arena, you know, I've got a brand, and so that allows me to fish.
Mark, I'm sure there's lots of things in your military background that prepared you for entrepreneurship. I do see a lot of the same values and the same habits and things being applied that can help an entrepreneur. But is there one in particular that you carried over and said, wow, that really does apply to owning my own business?
Certainly discipline, the ability to articulate a vision and create a plan. You know, in the military, we're very good at that. I'm rehearsing that plan and then executing, right? So, I mean, I really follow military problem solving processes, and that's been quite helpful. You know, when I was, this is probably going off topic slightly, but when I was in the Army, I always remember seeing this this painting of Admiral Nelson, right? So British Battle of Trafalgar, and he talked about his captains as being the entrepreneurs of battle. And you know, that so I was an entrepreneur of battle in places like Kandahar, in particular, during Operation Medusa, which was Canada's largest combat operation since the Korean War. And we were solving problems in a very entrepreneurial way. And so I'm an engineer by both education, training, and, you know, and profession. So I like definitions. And the best definition of entrepreneurship that I found is, and I'm just going to read it off screen from my notes. it's the pursuit of opportunity beyond resources controlled. And that came from a Harvard Business School professor. And to me, that is what it's all about. And so if you aren't willing and able, and you need to be both, to go out and create opportunity beyond your current cash flow, beyond, you know, your current physical constraints, then you should just go work for somebody else. And because it does take that kind of drive and that risk taking to be a successful entrepreneur.
It's really interesting you mentioned that, Mark, because I look at my show from kind of pre-pandemic and then post-pandemic. And pre-pandemic, no one talked about the negative side of entrepreneurship, that not everyone's cut out for this. But interestingly enough, a lot of my guests in the last few weeks in particular have talked about this, that, listen, this is not for everybody. And you need to understand that before you commit, you know, potentially your life savings, your family savings, whatever that looks like. I don't know if it's a sheer coincidence that this is pre and a post pandemic comment, but I've always felt that way, that this is not for everybody. I've coached people, you know, in the early stages of their entrepreneurial journey, and I try to be as honest with them as I can. And I've told them, listen, I don't think this is the right thing for you.
Right.
You know, you don't understand finances. You don't have your house in order that way. You don't want to do sales. Like, there's core fundamental things you have to be willing to commit to, or otherwise you really shouldn't do this. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you can be a great number 2, 3, or 100 in an organization and make a nice living and have do meaningful work and contribute. You know, I find, as much as I mentioned earlier, I'm a fan of these shows like Dragon's Den and Shark Tank, that they do kind of put us, the entrepreneurs, on a pedestal, and they show only, they tend to only show the good part of it, and the guy that started in his garage and ended up, you know, a billionaire. Well, that's not, you know, that's the exception, not the rule, for sure. So I don't know if there's something around that, that people see it as this, you know, unicorn style lifestyle that everyone can achieve. I don't think that's realistic. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, several. And so hopefully I put them in a logical sequence here. You know, most, I don't have the stats, but, you know, how many businesses fail after 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, right? Like there's a drop off every time. And even if you make it past, you know, whatever that magical cutoff is, or the statistical cutoff, it's still hard. Okay. So that's number one. I like this idea, this Japanese concept of something called Ikigai, if you've ever heard of it.
And yeah, I have. I've seen the PDF. It's very cool.
So there's four overlapping circles in a Venn diagram. And the circles are, what do you love? What are you good at? And those things aren't necessarily the same. What does the world need? What can you be paid for? And the overlap of all of those things is this concept of Ikigai, which, you know, I think roughly translated is happiness in life through a purpose and meaning. Okay. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, you really need to answer those four questions. Because, you know, it could be what you love, and maybe you're even good at it, but if you can't get paid for it, it's a hobby. And there are far easier ways of making a living, right? Far easier ways in entrepreneurship of making a living. Now, are you going to get the freedom to pursue your own vision? Probably not if you're working for someone else, right? So there's some intangibles, there's some non-financial benefits to being an entrepreneur, without a doubt. But it depends on what your family situation is. So I'll go on another tangent here. I'm a big fan of Nassim Taleb's writings. So specifically, he wrote something called, well, The Black Swan made him famous, and then he wrote Anti-Fragile, Things That Gain from Disorder. Well, that's kind of entrepreneurship as well. But there's a lot of stuff in there that you would think goes with resilience and this anti-fragility. But he talks about the barbell strategy where, you know, so picture a barbell. It's got heavy weights on the outside, right? And it's got the barbell and those. So if you were to drop that, you wouldn't hurt yourself because the risk is on the outside. So how do you protect your core while doing these things that are risky? And entrepreneurship is risky. So, you know, my personal example is I retired after 2 decades. So I had a pension. My house was paid for because I was reasonably smart with my money. Although I did get drunk in the mess, on many occasions, blowing several $100. But so financially, I was secure from a family perspective, which allowed me to take these risks because I didn't pay myself for the first 3 years. Because leaders eat last. So you pay everyone else first before yourself. So like you need to figure out where this is in life's journey. And do you have all the other things in place to either inoculate you or protect you to a certain amount while you take risks in this, you know, on the edges and, you know, this barbell analogy again, in terms of this thing you're trying to start. So for me, I think that's been a double-edged sword because it's allowed me the comfort to experiment and, you know, fail. And I haven't had a lot of failures, but I've had some. But did it also take away the hunger because, you know, I was safe to a certain extent and I didn't have to bet at all. So I'm a big fan of contingency plans because, you know, that was drilled into me in the Army. To some points where you have 4 different contingencies. It's called a PACE plan, primary, alternate, contingency, emergency. So that's the way that I like to operate. But if you're just going to try this out, I implore you to think about those things.
Yeah, that's really good advice, Mark. Hey, listen, before we let you go and before we give you a chance to tell our listeners where they can find out more about you, do you mind put you on the spot here? But you mentioned, you know, you're doing speaking now and you relate a lot of your stories, you know, from your time in the military and how that affects leadership. Do you have a favorite one or something you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I do 2 talks. One is on leadership of self. Okay. And the other is on resilience, which quite fortunately, I just gave to the Ottawa Red Blacks. And so that was interesting. I tell the story of the time when my vehicle strikes an improvised explosive device and I'm blown up. And, you know, it's about a 5-minute story. So I'm not going to go into it, in detail, but essentially, you know, that was a moment of truth. Personal crisis as well as, you know, I'm the leader of this group. And so, there's a collective issue at play here. And all the things that I had been taught, all the things that I'd trained on, because in crisis, most of us, we don't rise to the occasion. Rather, we sink to the level of our training. And so what are all the things you can do to prepare for whatever adversity you think you're going to face? You know, because we all get blown up in life. Now, for most of us, that's not a literal event. Okay, but we're going to get blown up. Our dreams, our plans, our projects, our businesses. And when we do, we have a choice about how we react. We have that choice, right? Resilience is a skill that can be taught and you can learn to struggle well. So the work that I do with people, not just from a physical, cognitive, but emotional and spiritual perspective, and relationship perspective, because it's about the team. I want to give them all the tools possible. So when they go out there and they're in that fight, that business fight, they've got the resilience skills personally to withstand that kind of adversity, or at least adapt to it, bounce back from it, but then also make their team stronger.
Thanks for sharing that, Mark. Appreciate it. Where can our listeners find out more about your company?
So either my website, so gasparotto.co, or I'm on LinkedIn, both personally, so Mark Gasparotto, and my company, the Gasparotto Group, is on LinkedIn as well. That's the only social media that we're actually active on. So either one of those is the best way to find out more about what we do.
Thanks so much for doing this, Mark. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Pat, my pleasure. Thank you.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.